You are listening to episode 236 of This is Type 1. Today I'm talking with Peter Friedfeld from Diabetes Sangha about the importance of meditation in type 1 diabetes management and his work in the diabetes community. So Peter, welcome to the show.
Hey, happy to be here, Colleen. Thanks for having me on today.
I'm so excited to talk to you about like all things meditation because I've been getting back into it recently. But before we sort of get into that, just tell our audience a little bit more about who you are and the story of your diagnosis in particular.
Sure. My name is Peter, and I was diagnosed about 10 years ago. So I just celebrated my 10-year anniversary, which was shocking for me. I had no idea that it was 10 years. It felt maybe more like two or three. And that's, I know that that's kind of crazy, but that's really what it felt like to me. And it was interesting. On the actual day of my anniversary, I was speaking at a JDRF Type 1 Nation Summit for Diabetes Sangha. So it really came home and hit home. Also, because when I first was diagnosed, one of the first things I did was go to a Type 1 Nation Summit as an attendee. It was the first time I really saw folks living with type 1 diabetes and their families and the grandparents and the kids. So it was quite an interesting experience because I was diagnosed later in life. I was diagnosed at 54. But that also came as a shock and surprise.
Did you know anything about diabetes before that diagnosis?
I didn't at all. In a sense, my dad was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. So my dad and my grandfather had type 2. I had a cousin who had type 1 diabetes who never spoke about it. And she was diagnosed also in her mid-30s, but never spoke about it at all. So in a sense, I think like many people, we go through life and we know people who have diabetes, who live with diabetes. Type 1, not as much, of course, but type 2, I think is much more prevalent, obviously. So in my case, I knew my family living with type 2. But I really had no connection to diabetes at all. I was something that, you know, I saw my dad maybe take some pills and that was it. My cousin, I knew she had type 1. I had no idea what it was. So when I was diagnosed, I was actually misdiagnosed as a type 2 diabetic.
Yeah.
I know that's very common, especially for folks that are diagnosed, you know, probably 40 and over. A lot of times there's misdiagnosis, I think as much as 50% later on in life. So my diagnosis came as a complete shock to me. It came out of probably two back-to-back physical exams where my A1C was rising. The first time my doctor told me, hey, I think you know, your A1C is up in that 5.6 level. Of course, we don't like to be there today. You better watch yourself. And maybe this could be the beginning of prediabetes. I asked, what does that mean? He says, well, you know, maybe in 5 to 10 years, you could become diabetic. I'm like, okay. I was a little taken aback by that, but didn't really think much about it. And then 6 months later, I was having a lot of the symptoms. I was having frequency in urination. My vision was challenged. I had numbness in my feet, extremities, and things just didn't feel right. And my dad, who I mentioned was type 2, said, let me be a blood test. Because he knew that I was told that I was pre-diabetic. And I was 230.
Oh.
And he said, you need to get to your doctor fast.
Yeah.
And the night before that, because I was down visiting him in Florida, and I just remember it was probably the last time I had pizza for about 7 years. And I had this big pizza. So, of course, I was blaming it on the pizza. Like, of course, it's the pizza. But when I went back to New York, I was tested and my A1C was 8.1.
Wow.
And my doctor told me, you're diabetic. And that's when I really had challenge. That's when I was challenged. I'm like, something's wrong here. And I had, again, no idea what that meant. And as he explained it to me, I really started to freak out. I mean, I was uncomfortable about everything, what to eat, how to treat myself. I mean, what do you do? And it was a very challenging time. I was acting out. I was difficult to be with. I didn't want to share with anyone this diagnosis. I was embarrassed about it and so uncomfortable. Like everything, I just felt like everything in my life was changing. I didn't know what to eat. I didn't know how to eat. Unfortunately, one thing I did do that was helpful was met up with a diabetes care educator. So that was on Valentine's Day, which is the day that I celebrate my anniversary, actually. And we met, and it was a very, other than a very quiet place in the winter. So it was It was a snowy, cold day. And the week before, I tried to see my diabetes care educator, and she was away on vacation. And I came with all like my numbers, and I was pricking my finger every hour and writing everything down. When I came back the next week to see her, she wasn't there. And I'm pretty sure I started crying. I was so emotionally burnt. And this woman came out and she says, "What's going on?" And I told her I was supposed to see this educator. She's not here on vacation. She goes, "I can help you." And she was a wonderful, warm person, very helpful in me. And I want to explain that she didn't think I was type 2. That was the first time I heard that. And really put me on a wonderful diet and exercise routine that eventually, within the first year, I was able to get off all my meds and really bring my A1C down to low fives, and really felt like I was getting control back over my diabetes, my type 2 diabetes. But of course, it kept on creeping up, right?
I was
having a nice honeymoon period. So eventually, you know, those meds started that I got off were being added on. And about a year and a half later, I had an incident. I was traveling and I had a tough incident and went back to my doctor and said, "This is something that's not right." I was on my third type 2 med. And finally, I went to see a different doctor and she confirmed, "You're type 1 and you need to be on insulin tomorrow."
Drives me bonkers how many doctors are like, if you're over a certain age, it has to be type 2. Let's just not do the tests.
And it was really interesting because there were tests to do, and I was asking for them. And the response I always got, the test won't show anything. My brothers.
How would they know if they didn't test?
Right. So it turns out I finally got the right treatment, and with the encouragement of my healthcare support team. And that's what rocked my world. And in a way, I felt that and I've heard this from other people that, okay, I have my diagnosis. I know what path I'm on now, because there was a year and a half I didn't, but now I know the path. And that's when, you know, I'll never forget sitting in my new endo's office and he pulled out two boxes of insulin, you know, and he says, there were pens. He said, "This one you take in the morning, and this one you take for each meal." And I'm like, "Well, for how long? A week?" "For like a month?" He's like, "For the rest of your life." I'm like, "Oh, shoot." And you know, I lost it again. But that was the opening salvo for my T1D diagnosis.
What did you learn from the period of time where you were misdiagnosed that like really helped you in your path afterward?
Sure. So I think at that time, it was a very cold winter. And again, my world was very quiet in the winter. I remember reaching out to friends, of course, and family, getting support. But eventually I found my way to yoga. And I always liked yoga, but really never had a practice at all. I was the type of guy that did it like on vacation, and then, you know, couldn't find the time afterwards. And it was like there was nothing else to do. And I needed to get connected with myself. And I started doing yoga once a week, and it was me and like one other person. So it was really great to have this like one-on-one. And I just had actually a great person who was leading the classes who actually, in addition to yoga, did chanting and also really was into the meditation part of the yoga experience. So I really found that to be very grounding and helpful to me. And it was the beginning of a different path for me, but the beginning of my yoga practice, which really opened up a lot of different doors for me. But the first year and a half, it was really just trying to understand that I'll have a new way of living. I'm still me, right? And that was very important. But I also, you know, I lost 20 pounds in that first year. I didn't weigh a lot to begin with. So I really, you know, was quite dramatically smaller. And that was the first year. So I had a lot of physical changes. My eating was completely different. I was probably somewhat disordered eating as well, because I was trying to completely control my life with food and exercise. So yes, I had a low A1C, but I was challenged in a lot of other areas in my life. Again, so that the diagnosis of type 1, and of course the starting insulin, really was a huge change in my life. Like, it was like another door was opening up for me to walk through.
When you started that yoga practice, did you find yourself connecting more with how you felt in your body?
I think for me, yes, absolutely. But I think the biggest benefit for me was getting out of my head, right? And realizing for that 1 hour and 15 minutes, and eventually became a 4 or 5 day a week practice, that I was completely out of my bonehead and just being, right? Just, you know, and it's very hard to do anything, actually, any type of sport sometimes, where you really have to focus on something, and yoga requires that. So I found that this the combination of the physical movements and breath work, you know, to be completely supportive of myself, and the addition of the, you know, the Shavasana, the meditation at the end. In this case, there was always some music involved. So I found that hour and 15 minutes were really restful, restorative, energetic all at the same time. And it was the beginning of a practice that really developed over the next few years that I found so helpful for me. And I have an addictive personality, so I could kind of, you know, it's how I go through it, was how I got through the first year and a half with food and exercise. And then I became like, you know, I have to do this practice. But it really helped ground me, I think, and helped me connect with myself.
When did you go from just the yoga classes and the meditations at the end to actually doing meditation as its own practice?
Yeah, it was actually a few years. And again, just like yoga, I was always interested in meditation. I've always enjoyed the practice when I, again, usually away somewhere on a vacation or with someone, they say, you know, go to this class. And I really enjoyed it. But the idea of being by myself for 5 minutes was really scary. It's just something I never did. I didn't like being alone and not doing something or talking or being with someone. So fast forward through a few years, it really was at the beginning of COVID.
Oh,
that things changed drastically for me in terms of that connection to meditation. So I had, in this first few years after being diagnosed, I connected with a lot of people in the diabetes online community. It was a way of finding others with T1D. And I can backtrack for a second. I was very scared to do a lot of things that I did normally. So I was very scared to travel. I was very scared to do certain types of exercising. And I used to bike, and I love traveling by myself. Travel by myself, I could do. But being by myself in a quiet room, I couldn't do. But I found really a lot of folks in the online community that I connected with that helped me along this path as well, with yoga and with exercise. And through all this, there was a group that was called Diabetics. It was with Eric Dowds and a bunch of other friends that I connected with in diabetes. And at the beginning of COVID, we got together and Eric put on a course with Sam Tolman for type 1 diabetics. Now, we're all going back to that. It was 2020 and, you know, we were sheltered in place. We lived on Zoom. Life was like, you know, in the room by yourself. And so when the course was offered, I signed up for it. I believe it was a 5 or 6 week course. And that was the first taste I had for meditation. You know, it was the overview of how this can be helpful, perhaps, but which I was fascinated by. But I was really enjoying the meditation practice with the group. It was a group of people that went through it. It might have been about 25 people, I think. And we would meet once a week, or twice a week, actually. And then I just found this connection. I wasn't quite sure what it was, but I knew I was really enjoying it. And from there, I started to do a daily practice. And when the course was over, continued. Sam was running a group, also on Zoom, for all people, not just people living with type 1 diabetes, that he led. And I would sit and join that group daily. Wow. And so before I knew it, I had a daily practice for at least 20 minutes a day. And that was really the beginning of this journey that I started during COVID with this group, taking this course, and then, you know, joining another group for daily practice.
For you, what is the connection between meditation and type 1 diabetes?
So it's interesting. I think at that point, I didn't know exactly what it was. But in understanding it more as time went on, two things I realized. And it was interesting because it was being pointed out by other people. Right. So people were telling me over time that, gee, you're a little bit a different person than you were. You're always a good guy. We kind of liked you. You know, you had a good heart. But yeah, there were times you get a little anxious and maybe blow off some steam occasionally. Like I said, I was difficult to be around when I was first diagnosed. But I think the idea that I became more accepting of my own diabetes, that was a big thing for me. It's something that didn't come easily initially. And even though I thought it did, like, oh yeah, I got this, I didn't have it. So that was one thing that I connected with, this idea of acceptance. And again, something that was not, it's not the first day, but over time, I felt that, this comfort as opposed to discomfort. The other thing that I realized was I was not acting out. So my response to everything was more measured. And again, I always was a very grounded person. Again, I was not one of these guys that flew off the handle. But I noticed that when I was first diagnosed in those first years, everything was being ratcheted up. My highs, my lows, you know, it was like I was creating my own tornadoes in my own life and sucking people into them. And I was really not aware of that. I mean, I was aware of it, but not to the extent that other people were. They were really like, and what happened over time is that that began to change as well. That my responses became more measured, more reasonable. In meditation, we use the word equanimity to have a sense of the right response. Not no response, but the correct response, the right response, a comfortable response, perhaps. And I think that was happening to me. This was pointed out, again, over time by my business partner, by my life partner, by friends, family, mom. People began to recognize this. So there were some changes that were happening in my life. But I think also when we think of this big connection between type 1 diabetes and meditation, because I believe there is one, and we speak about this a lot in the Diabetes Sangha. So what makes us so special living with diabetes and these meditation practices that have been around for thousands of years? And think about why these practices were created millennia ago, was to help people it spoke to this idea of suffering or dis-ease that people were living with. It spoke to the idea that things were always out of people's control. There was no control. It spoke to the idea that everything was always changing and everything's interconnected. And when you think about it, the foundations of these practices is exactly the same as our life with diabetes. We're not in control. And when we try to control it, we can create some havoc.
We overcorrect and we rage bolus and then we crash.
There you go. Right? And then we pull other people into it because everything is interconnected as well. And something can happen at work that you're low and something happens at work and then you're acting out and then you're affecting someone else's life. It's all interconnected. And this idea that we live with, you know, I use the word dis-ease, but of course our life is uncomfortable. Our days are challenged. So the foundations of these practices are exactly connected to how we live our lives with T1D. And of course, not only T1D, but everyone does live this way as well. Things are always changing in our lives. We're not in control. But this real great connection also, you know, with meditation, we talk a lot about awareness. People living with T1D are very aware. It's kind of like we have a leg up on this awareness thing. Like it's, you know, we are very aware all the time. We have to be. You know, and the more in tune we are with our bodies, with our sensations, you know, feeling our highs and our lows and what's going on around us. And this is very much part of our practice. Awareness is a big part of our practice. So again, we like to say people who live with T1D, you know, have this little leg up. We're kind of grounded in these foundations, and we kind of understand awareness, and the practice is really helpful.
I love that. I'm just thinking, though, how reliant I have become on my CGM, because with my unexpected high today, I didn't feel high at all until I looked at my phone and saw my blood sugar. I'm like, oh, now I feel high. But that's happened with lows as well. Like, I won't realize I'm low sometimes until I look at the CGM, see the number 60 and be like, oh, now it all starts rushing in.
Yeah.
So I think we get a little bit too reliant on our devices sometimes. Thankfully, I still wake up for all of my lows, or at least all the lows that my sensor doesn't want to stop. But overall, what do you think we should be like? Should our relationship with our technology change to increase more awareness?
100%. We're so reliant on technology. So for me, I was MDI my whole life until last year. So I shouldn't say my whole life, but you know, for the 9 years.
Your whole diabetes life.
My whole diabetes life. So I was on MDI and I really didn't want the pump. Certainly I fought a CGM for 7 years. I didn't want that technology. And now, of course, it's like autopilot almost. When I went to the pump, and obviously CGM was essential for me because I was having too many lows and not getting sleep. And that, you know, all the things that we know and how helpful a CGM can be. But then you become very reliant on that technology. And what's really interesting, we do a practice in some of the meditation that you can look at your numbers on a CGM and feel the response, right? Yeah. You can look at if it's 63, that will trigger something that you can actually connect with that. And if you look at it and it's to your point, if you look at it and it's 240, you can actually begin to feel that 240.
Yeah, that's point. Exactly what happened.
Right. So yeah, we're connected. We can really feel this connection between our blood sugars in our bodies. And the meditation practices can really help us feel those numbers. And I used to think that I didn't feel lows a few years ago. I'm like, oh, I don't feel my lows anymore. No, I'm actually pretty connected with my lows now. I understand, even today, it's the obvious ones are like, when you're not 60 and you look at your meter, it says 60, you can feel that like, oh, and I'm like, oh no, I feel like I'm kind of 128. And, yep. You know, you can look at a meter and if you're, you know, it's a game I play with myself. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm 130. I'm close on that one. But you begin to sense, I think, once you feel more connected with your body and the body sensations and what's going on, you can begin to have a better sense of where you are with blood sugar. And I think I found meditation to be very helpful for that. I never felt highs also. And now I think I'm much more attuned to when I'm high.
That's really, really interesting. It makes me wonder, like, so if I'm hearing you correctly, we can use that meditation practice to connect with how blood sugars feel in our bodies so that we can question whether or not the CGM is correct. Because I've had the same thing where I'll look at what the CGM says, but I know that's not right based on how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Whether it's too high or too low or whatever. And so then I'll do a check on the meter and like, see, it's wrong.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people lose their ability to feel their lows. I think it's more common. But in my case, I like to speak from my perspective because it's not maybe true for everyone. It's not true for everyone who meditates at all. But I think in my case, I became really more in tune with the sensations in my body as opposed to relying just on numbers or devices or not knowing or just feeling those extremes. Like, yeah, when I'm sweating bullets and I'm shaking, obviously I'm low. You know, that part has moved away a little bit. I don't quite go to that extreme, but I do feel my lows and I'm more attuned to my sensations in my body, I think primarily through the meditation practices.
I think too many people now are just disconnected from their bodies completely, and meditation, breath work, like all the things that I experienced at the Connected in Motion Slipstream last year where I met you, like those have been amazing. So like of all of the sessions that were there, the breathwork one that Katrina led was by far my favorite. And I've even done some of those sessions by myself in like hotel rooms, and it's the same power, but it's connecting with the body. And as somebody who has lived most of my life just in my head, naturally, because I do that, getting in the body. So many people like, but we're so intellectual and less feeling because we weren't taught how to feel as kids. It was more like, don't wear your emotions on your sleeve and that kind of stuff. So experiencing more normalization of getting inside your body and connecting with your body, whether it's through breath work or meditation or mindfulness, all of those things. I love how all of that can help improve your diabetes.
Yeah, it's, I think it's probably the biggest lesson I've learned in the past few years. There's been many. Community is the supportive community is huge for me in helping to live a better life, manage diabetes better. But absolutely, meditation these past few years has, I think, been the center of that. And it comes back to some of those things that you mentioned, that you know, we're never taught to feel and be connected to our bodies. And it's very scary for many people to feel connected to their bodies.
Yeah.
It's a scary place to go. So I think we have to be careful with that in general, but so helpful when we can make that connection and just understand what's going on, not intellectually, but from how we're feeling, what we're experiencing.
Right. And not just with diabetes, because my biggest pet peeve from growing up, because I was diagnosed at age 2, my biggest pet peeve was my parents asking me what my blood sugar was before asking about why am I feeling the way I'm feeling, as if the emotions were governed by the blood sugar and not maybe the other way around.
Yeah, of course. That, you know, I've heard this, like, I have a business partner who's also my brother. He's like, you're moody right now. Are you, you're having a high blood sugar? Like, yeah, and I'm entitled to be moody.
Yep.
Right? That comes with that, and it's okay. Actually, you're just ratcheting this up, but I'm going to respond from a very centered place perhaps today.
How would you say your relationship with your diabetes has changed, improved, evolved over the last 10 years?
So I think I know I'm in a very different place, because again, I came from, I think one of the challenges of people that are diagnosed later in life, and I think it's challenging no matter what age you're diagnosed. If you're diagnosed at 2, you have a whole set of challenges, and your family has a whole set of challenges. I think for those that are diagnosed later in life, that life, this is a big change that happens. So if I look at myself, that coming from a place of non-acceptance to a lot of guilt and anxiety about diabetes and my life that I would have to live, to where I am today, which is still not easy. Still a life of a lot of living with a lot of challenges and things that I can't control, but absolutely more accepting of where I am, more comfortable with how I respond, how I can, which is very important, because responding means also how I treat myself, how I take care of myself. And that's very helpful with living with type 1 diabetes, and more connected to a community that I can relate to and that we can understand each other. So I came from a very different place, I think, 10 years ago to where I am today. And I also see myself, it's interesting, sometimes I think about this, am I the same person? And I'd like to think that none of us are the same person that we were 10 years ago. And if it wasn't for this fork, it would have been another fork.
Yeah.
In the road. And of course, we're not the same person as we are when we're 20 to 30 or 30 to 40. And there's a school of thought that says every 10 years we get reborn again. We're moving through a different cycle in life. And so I connect with that as well. I think I'm in a different place, but it's a path that being diagnosed with T1D led me down, and I'm very comfortable with it.
That's awesome. So thinking about how we're different people every 10 years. So I use this service called futureme.org, and we'll link to this in the show notes, but it gives you the ability to send yourself an email into the future. It just like holds it there for however long, whether it's a day to, you know, you can pick the date, but they have presets for like 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And so just thinking about, you could encapsulate your experience of yourself now and send it to yourself 10 years in the future. And then you could see for sure, have I actually changed based on what my experience is of diabetes in this moment?
I love that.
Yeah, I've been using it for daily, just where I'm at today, send it to myself in a year in the future. And I've done like goals on New Year's, send that to the future. And then I can look back and see how that's gone. It's just kind of a fun experiment to see how me now is going to look to me in the future.
How long have you been doing that for?
Honestly, like 6 months. So not that long at all, but it's been a daily practice so far. It's really fun. Wonderful.
That should be really cool.
I'm excited. I'm excited for future me.
Yeah, no, of course. And that'd be interesting to see, because I think we all can do that. Go back in our lives and think of where I thought I'd be and where I am today.
Yeah.
And again, obviously where I thought I'd be 10 years ago is not where I am today. But we all change and morph with time. And I think in a very positive way for most people. It's challenging, but if you have good friends, good support, take care of yourself, I think we move in a direction that feels comfortable.
Speaking of those good friends and that good support, what would you say your favorite part of the Diabetes Online community has been?
I don't know if I have a favorite part.
Okay.
If I have a favorite part, it's definitely meeting people. So if that is a part or a piece of it, but I think I owe a lot of where I am today, living with T1D, to the online community. I think some of my best friends today in life I've met through that community. The support has been incredible. The projects I've been involved with have all through the community. Diabetes Side was born out of a connection to the community. I worked on the film Pair or Die that was born out of absolute connections to the community. So I think everything that I've done was born out of that. And it was actually born out of this need, this desire to help heal myself. And that, you know, that was, I remember reaching out online because I had nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
Like many people, we don't know where to go. We have no one to connect with. And that was so important. So I would say that the friends I've made and that have opened up many doors for me to experience different parts of the community probably has been the most important thing for me.
So I mentioned earlier that we met at Connected in Motion's Slipstream in Colorado last year.
Yeah.
When did you get involved with Connected in Motion?
So that also probably came around through this community as well. Sam Tolman, who I mentioned earlier, was a speaker at the virtual summit during COVID. I think that's when they began the virtual summits. I don't know if they had them before, virtual slipstreams.
Right.
And so he spoke at two of those. And that was around the same time we were beginning Diabetes Sangha. And they were very well attended. And what we realized and through those summits and also through Diabetes Sangha, that there was an interest that once people were aware of the topic, this idea of meditation, mindfulness, and diabetes, there were people that were really interested in learning more. So in speaking to the Connected Emotion team, we said, hey, this is a great opportunity to kind of bring this live, right? To bring some of the work that we have been doing, which was offering daily meditation practices on diabetes, and to kind of bring it out there live. At the same time, I was always fascinated. I never attended a slipstream. So the one where we met in Colorado was my first live slipstream, but I always...
Wait, no, really? That was your first live one?
Yeah.
That was my first one ever, but I didn't realize that was your first live one.
Yeah, totally.
You were walking around like you owned the place, like you knew everything, how everything worked.
No, I got there 6 hours before, maybe. So, yeah, but I always wanted to go. So I, you know, as a kid, I went to summer camps and I always liked outdoors and, you know, the community was very important to me. And I always wanted to go to the one in Maine, which was the one near my home. But the dates never worked out. For 2 or 3 years, the dates never worked out. So when the opportunity came to really speak with Connected Emotion and say, hey, Diabetes Sangha would like to be able to partner with you and be able to offer through the one facilitators that we have, and there were 5 or 6 of us at the time, to be able to do live workshops. And they thought it was a great idea. We thought it was a great idea. So we connected on that last year. I think we did 5 slipstreams. We had different facilitators at each slipstream doing different workshops. And so it was a great, you know, it was a great experience for me because I got to go to the slipstream finally and experience what that was like. And of course, it's the same for many people. The first time being with so many type 1 friends that you get to meet and feel, and everyone's beeping and moving and swinging and the highs and lows at the same time. So everything feels comfortable and like, oh, this is how life should be, kind of feeling. So it was a great connection, and we'll be doing the same support with them this year at the upcoming sessions. Yeah.
Speaking of like being in the same room with like 100 other people who all have type 1, I'm used to going to kids camp. So I'm used to being in a room with 100 kids who all have type 1 diabetes. But the Slipstream in Colorado last year was my first experience in a room with that many adults who all had type 1. They were all talking about it in different ways, like their experiences. That just blew my mind.
Yeah.
So fun.
And of course, I never went to a kids camp for diabetes. Right. So that was a new experience for me. But yeah, the idea that everyone is together. And I think we all experienced that in different ways. If you've ever gone to a meetup, and that's kind of where I met some people on the way, or maybe a conference was probably the first time that I experienced that many people, you know, at a full day conference. But that, you know, that whole connected emotion experience, which is wonderful, spending 3 days with community and all the activities and events, it was really, again, another door that opened for me, you know, that weekend for sure.
Yeah. And everybody there gets it. We both went on the expert hike, which I was like, is this really expert? But it turned out it was, because it kicked my blood sugars butt, and I went urgent low, and I was sitting there on the trail with Katie, and you gave me one of your glucose SOS packs. I'm like, this is amazing. So I went home when I immediately bought a whole bunch for Amazon. So thanks to you, I have a new low snack for when I have my urgent lows.
Well, shout out to SOS, because I used it last night, and I got their packet here by my desk, because I think I used it early this morning. You know, it is wonderful. It's a wonderful go-to. And yes, I remember going through quite a few packs.
Yeah. And everybody was just giving me all of their low snacks, whether it was the glucose SOS or the fruit snacks, or the fruit roll-ups or whatever. And so by the time I had all of that sugar on board, I was like sky high. It was great. That was the beauty of being at diabetes camp with other adults, is everybody's in the same boat.
Yeah. They got your back.
Yeah. Right.
No one's getting frantic there.
Nope. So we've talked a little bit about, like, in mentioning Diabetes Sangha, but what exactly is it as, like, a practice for people who are interested?
Sure. So Diabetes Sangha, basically, it's a community, mostly online, but it's a community that comes together through meditation and different practices. It's facilitated. We're a nonprofit organization. We started, like I said, right after COVID. So formed maybe about 6 months after COVID, we started sitting together. Following the course, Sam and Brooke Hassoff kind of pulled this together and created the space online to sit down, have a meditation practice, probably weekly at first, if I remember. And I think in 2020, that was mostly through 2021, beginning of 2021. And in 2022, we went through more of a formal 5 days a week practices. So we offer basically about 300 live practices over Zoom each year. And it's an amazing commitment, because it's been going on for 2.5 years now. So when you think of that in itself, about 300 live practices for the past 2.5 years, facilitated by a wonderful group of people all living with type 1 diabetes, all with different experiences, different types of practices, coming to diabetes at different ages. And we provide this space for people to connect, again, mostly on Zoom, for meditation. And it's really become a place to not only practice, but to learn how the practices are helpful. So there's always workshops throughout the year. We have guest facilitators and some wonderful people. You know, I'm thinking Rachel Zimmern, who's in Australia, and she's done some wonderful writing in the community, and Evan Sirok in Aspen. So as guest facilitators, we have some wonderful people connected to the community. We share their experiences on Sundays. So Sundays are usually workshop evenings. And then we do the live events. So the Connected Emotion live workshops, the work we do at JDRF, at their Type 1 Nation Summits. We work with different institutes, diabetes institutes. Culver is one of them in Chicago, running workshops for them. And we run a course, a diabetes education course, similar to the one that I took. That's created by Sam and Brooke. And that's a 5-week course, and it goes really through meditation. So some of the foundations of these practices and how it's helpful for people with diabetes, and really creating the space for people to have a practice, which is really important. You know, I can speak at a Type 1 Nation Summit or a Connected in Motion, and that's great. But for someone who's interested, to be able to have a place to go the next day.
Right.
And the next day. You know, meditation is you're making a commitment in general. It's something that doesn't see the benefit of it, doesn't happen necessarily overnight. So to build a consistent practice, a dedicated practice, is helpful. And I think the Diabetes Summit creates that sense of community. And it's become, you know, it started off as like, oh, this is a place to practice meditation, or I can learn about it here. It's become a community of people that connect through meditation and mindfulness practices. So our typical sessions may be 20 minutes led by one of our facilitators each day. And then there's always conversation afterwards, sharing about the practice. So what came up? What are you experiencing? And it gives a chance for people to talk about maybe what's going on in their life, and maybe how they connected to something in this practice, reinforcing the practice, connecting us as a community. And it's become something that's very sweet. Really enjoy. I enjoy seeing my friends online in real life and connecting through these practices.
I remember, so one of my friends who came with me to Slipstream, Ryan, he knew you before he came, and he's just like, he was so excited that you were going to be there. He could meet you in person. I like that kind of community.
It was great, because there were actually, I think, in the Colorado Slipstream, there were maybe 3 or 4 people that I knew all from online, and you know, that I didn't know were going to be there at that Slipstream, but we all knew each other from the online. So yeah, it's an amazing way to connect in a different way. There are a lot of online groups, and some of them are challenging for some, and some can be not what they're looking for. And of course, our group may not be what everyone's looking for either. We are providing the space for these practices, but it's going back to when we speak about the benefits or how we can live a better life with these practices, acceptance, you know, the right response to what's happening around us, understand that we're not in control of everything and that's okay.
Yeah.
And just, you know, living life, taking it down a notch, being kinder, more gentle in our relationships with others, goes a long way in really helping us live a little bit easier life and a better life with T1D.
So I hear you guys have a course coming up soon. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So the course is a 5-week course that begins on April 21st, and it's for 5 Sundays. I believe it's from 4 p.m. on the Pacific Coast time and 7 on the East Coast time. And those are Sundays. It's a live hour. It's with Sam and Brooke, who are the 2 course facilitators. And that's also content that we created that's been recorded. So lessons that come out each week. So people have a practice, home practice. They can go through course material. And it's really will help people, if they're new to meditation, we'll give them the foundations of the practices. And I think for a lot of people also that are experienced with meditation, it gives them a way to practice with the community and learn together, ask questions, get closer to their practice perhaps. And it's a wonderful course. Last year we did this course and we had 70 people who registered.
Wow.
So we have a similar number that's registered now. So the course is registration is open. Yeah, it's a wonderful community, and it shouldn't overwhelm anyone with that number, because not everyone shows up, but it's really it's a very sweet community, and the lessons are very impactful. We break down to smaller groups, and people can also learn at their own pace. So I found the course, again, this is a course that I took when I first was introduced to meditation, something very similar. Found it extremely helpful for me. So the course is offered by donation, so no one has to feel that it's expensive. It's free. If you want to be, it's really pay whatever you like. money goes that we can take in from the course. It goes to support Diabetes Sangha and the ongoing free meditation classes that we offer throughout the year. So it's a really wonderful way to get involved.
For people who are interested in learning more about the course and the Sangha, where should they go?
Sure. So diabetessangha.com. I think we'll leave it in the notes. There's two S's in the middle. But diabetessangha.com is really our home base for everything. So we have on that site, we'll have the information about our course. We have information about Connected in Motion and the upcoming schedule there. And probably most importantly are the free classes that are offered. There's a calendar that gets updated every month that shows when the practices are being offered, who's leading the practices, when the special events are happening. So that's all there at diabetessangha.com. And also on Instagram, we're fairly active there at Diabetes Sangha. Ourselves, we try to share our content. Lastly, there's a newsletter that goes out weekly with small little updates of what's happening. So folks can also sign up on our website for the newsletter. That way they get all the information. But there is a course page there. There's some video content that people can watch to hear directly from Sam and Brooke about the course and read a little bit more detail about it. And it's really, I think it's important to stress that it's open to everyone. Especially helpful for those that want to develop a practice and maybe they're interested, but they haven't found the right way to begin their practice. I think the community supports each other in the process. So it's a great way for those that are new to the practice. And also, again, for anyone that has a dedicated practice, we'll find it extremely helpful. We have people that will take the course I took it last year that are signed up again for the course this year.
That's staying power right there.
Yeah. And we're always learning something new, right? So it's always important to keep learning, keep practicing. And I think the course is a very helpful way to do that.
So I'm going to guess the answer to this question, but what's one actionable tip that our listeners can take away from today's episode? I'm thinking it's they go sign up.
Absolutely. Well, I would say even before that, come join one of our classes, online classes, sessions, practices, so you can experience what it's like. But I think real actionable is to know that, you know, when it comes to meditation and mindfulness practices, it's so easy to begin. It's just a matter of taking some time for yourself. And the practice doesn't have to be 20 minutes. You can really accomplish a lot in a few minutes a day of just sitting and centering yourself and breathing. As you mentioned, breath work is so important. And just finding a few minutes a day for yourself. And there's a lot of apps that are very helpful. You know, this Insight Timer is a great app that a lot of folks use. And Headspace is another one that folks use. Calm. Diabetes Sangha has a YouTube channel, so we put out meditations. But just to begin to make that commitment to, I'd like to try this and see what happens. And I think we all say we have a few minutes a day to do this. That's probably a really good first actionable step. And to join in any of the live sessions, folks can see what it's like to sit through a practice. There's no real commitment to that, except show up, camera on or off, sit for 20 minutes, relax in a quiet space, and kind of experience maybe something that's new and unique and special. So that can be very helpful.
Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't get to?
Anything I wanted to talk about that we didn't get to? Probably lots of things.
We can always have you back for another one.
Yeah, I would say nothing specifically, but really important to find connection within the community. And even though I know we talked about the online community, I've met so many people that are not online in real life. And I think that's very important too, that to know that there's so much support out here. Having a diagnosis of T1D can be really helped through connections with others and connections to the community, however we find that. And so I think it's great to have a diet buddy and experience how much we can learn from each other and how much joy and sharing we can bring to each other. So, yeah.
All right. So something we've been asking all of our guests as we wrap up is if you have a book recommendation for our listeners, and it doesn't have to be diabetes related. So if you have like a favorite novel that you've been reading, share that.
Okay, so here's the skinny. I'm not a reader. So I read a lot online. I dabble a lot. So my favorite novel probably was Time and Again, which was a wonderful time travel book about New York City and really cool. So anyone who loves New York or what New York would have been like in a time gone by and being able to step into it, a great book. So kind of fun. As a kid, probably Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, for whatever reason. I really love that story and read that a few times. And for my meditation list, for anyone starting out, this great book, Wherever You Go, There You Are, by Jon Kabat-Zinn. And it's a wonderful book that people can really understand the concepts, which are not that complicated at all, about meditation and some of the foundations and how actually to work through some of the practices. It's a wonderful book for meditation.
Okay, I was kind of hoping you would have a meditation book example there. So I'm glad you came through on that one.
And I think Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, somehow he meditated also. He got, you know, wish for that golden ticket and he got it.
So we've already mentioned some of the links and stuff, but just as a recap, where is like the easiest place to find you online?
Yeah, so diabetessangha.com for a website. Personally, I'm Hamptons_T1DYogi on Instagram and Diabetes Sangha on Instagram as well. Those would be the three wonderful places that we connect with folks.
And we will link to all of those and your book recommendations in the show notes. Peter, thank you so much for joining me. It's been really fun talking to you.
So great to see you. And I don't know if you're going back to Colorado this year for Connected in Motion.
Oh, 100%. I already have my registration. Like, I'm going.
Okay. Well, I didn't register yet, but I am going to be there. And we have some new courses, new classes, and workshops that we're putting together.
Very excited. So
I'm really psyched to be there as well.
All right, everybody. Remember, you control your diabetes. It doesn't control you. Hey, if you like what you're listening to on this podcast, you have to join us in the Half Dead Pancreas Club. It's my private community where you'll connect face to face with other people with type 1 diabetes, get personalized emotional support, and learn how to handle anything T1D throws at you. Join us over at inspiredforward.com/community. I can't wait to see you there.